Now, Fairbanks is going to be, I think, our biggest turnout. We've reserved a room at the Noel Wien Library that will accommodate a large group of people. And we're hoping that we can fill that room up and have them pouring out the doors with people who have strong public opinion about the permanent fund, about the dividend program, about inflation proofing, and any other idea that may come forward at this hearing. We're going to stay past the 5 o'clock cutoff date if people want to testify. There's no limit to how long you can testify, and that we're going to stay late if we have to get as many people as we can on the record.
3, 2, 1. About 20 residents who live just outside North Pole city limits requested the annexation because they want city services. The city of North Pole would grow from nearly 4 square miles to more than 6 by annexing the land in areas along its current boundaries. The population would also increase to more than 2,000. About 400 people would become city residents if the annexation of 12 Mile Village and the Badger Road area were approved. Services and property taxes didn't seem to be the main concerns of people who didn't want the annexation, though. Most of them said if they had wanted city services, they would have moved into the city to begin with. Opponents at Saturday's hearing were led by business owner Jeanette James.
I think it's premature to be bringing us into the city at this time. I think that eventually we will probably be part of the city when the city is ready to give us the kind of services that a city should be able to do, such as water and sewer, and that's a long ways down the road at the way they're going, so I think it's premature.
Many residents who testified questioned whether better service would actually be provided in the city limits, even if that service was needed. In all, 16 people spoke out against the annexation, 2 supported it, and letters were read from 20 more people who also supported the annexation. The local boundary commission could have sent a recommendation to annex to the state legislature, but they want all the residents to have a say in the matter, so they agreed to put it to a vote. Registered voters in the areas will be able to approve or vote down the annexation, and the areas will be separated in the vote, so that if the majority of voters in one area want to be annexed, they could be. About 200 people live in each of the affected locations. North Pole Mayor Carlita Lewis defended the annexation before the commission, but wasn't surprised by the decision.
I guess I feel, you know, how many people testified? 16, 18 against, and probably the same amount for. I'm not sure that I think that's a majority. I mean, what are they looking at, 400 people? So, I mean, you know, how do you make a decision? And, you know, they say the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and I think in this case that's what happened. So, you know, that's the way it is.
The local boundary commission did agree to recommend that the 2 other areas proposed for annexation be approved. Both those areas are much smaller and less controversial. That land includes the right-of-way along the Richardson Highway and about 6 acres just south of the Petrostar refinery. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornson.
I think there are numerous surgical procedures that are not available and are not funded by the state of Alaska or any other state of the federal government. In fact, do people have a right to those procedures as well? I think there's a consistency argument there. If you're going to defend something as this totally private thing under a constitutional provision, it's very difficult to come back and say that then that should be paid for by the state of Alaska.
3, 2, 1. 2 proposals were given to the Assembly. 1 calls for renovating Main School. The other would place a new administration building where the University Park School now stands. The University Park project has been recommended as the one which should be chosen. The Assembly needs a voter-approved bond issue by the end of the year in order to be eligible for the state to pay most of the cost. Last night's special meeting was called specifically to consider the bond referendum just in time to go before the voters in 2 weeks. But some assembly members are concerned about putting the building on land the borough doesn't own. The borough leases the property from the University of Alaska. The lease expires in 30 years, and the university has indicated that it won't be extending it. Assembly member Bonnie Williams says that until the lease question is resolved, the Assembly should hold off on making the site for the administration offices specific, since University Park may not be the best site.
We don't own the land at U Park. They're not going to renew the lease. We would be throwing the money away after 30 years. The price is almost the same on Main. Maine is downtown, and closing Old Main would be rather devastating to the downtown area. The dollar price difference between the two is very small. Because it's so small, and because of the other factors, I think it would be of greater value long-term for the community to select Old Main.
The Assembly couldn't decide on a proposal last night, but members do want to get a bond question on the ballot. So even though the Assembly had pressed the issue just as late as it could because members originally wanted a site-specific proposal, 7 Assembly members voted last night to make the ballot question generic, asking for the $8 million in bonds without specifically identifying which structure the bonds would be used to build or renovate. So in 2 weeks, voters will have 2 bond issues to decide, a $25 million referendum for the other school building improvements and a new elementary school, and $8 million for administrative office space. If that bond issue is approved, the Assembly will then decide whether to renovate Old Main or put up a new building for $8 million. But they could also turn down both proposals and find another alternative or start all over again. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornton.
99% of the people in the area have voiced their opposition to putting a jail within their community. You can call it a halfway house. You can call it anything you like. It is a jail.
My problem is changing the rules after I'm already in. I did what was asked of me. I made a considerable investment in time and money, and have committed myself to a lengthy lease that I'm obligated to pay. And it's changing the rules after I got in, and that's what I object to.
The information that I have been presented to by Mr. Weimer this evening does not allow me to give you a probability estimate as to more likely than not, less likely than not, even money debt. I'm just saying that based on the limited information before me, yeah, there is a possibility that he could establish that he's got a grandfathered use.
Retail in Anchorage is doing real well. It's not doing as well in Fairbanks, but we do think that there's probably some oil cleanup money circulating in the Fairbanks economy too. So retail trade, even though it's down over the month, it is up from a year ago, and we do think that the Christmas season may be starting a little early, but those between the permanent fund checks and the cleanup money that's circulating in the economy.
3, 2, 1. The day after Thanksgiving is when the Christmas shopping season traditionally kicks off. The manager of the Fairbanks Nordstrom store, Marion Lundquist, says all indications are that business will be booming.
Traditionally, the day after Thanksgiving is always a retailer's dream as far as having lots of traffic, and I really don't see us not having that this year. I think it should be really good. I've noticed people are definitely out getting ideas for the holiday, so I would imagine it'll be very, very busy.
But shoppers may just be testing the waters as they head to stores this week. Fred Meyer, store manager, says the busiest shopping day will actually be in the middle of December.
I expect the 16th of December to be the busiest day because it's much closer to Christmas, and with the local payrolls in town, that would be the target that I figure is the busiest day of the year.
Fred Meyer's Dick Audette says shoppers are looking for traditional Christmas items, but he expects novelty gifts to sell well, too.
We do have some new things this year that could add to sales, such as novelty items, dancing Christmas trees that dance to music, or voice-activated wreaths that speak to you as you walk up to the door and sing you a Christmas carol, again activated by voice or noise or movement. A lot of new items to the market this year.
Audette expects snowboards to sell pretty well this season, since snowboarding is becoming more popular with kids. The Sears retail store in town is approaching its first anniversary. Even though many things still are available only through the catalog, manager Rusty Buss says business has been better than expected, and some items are really selling well.
Currently, snow throwers and tractors. are selling like mad.
And another local retailer may not be open to everyone, but it is doing pretty good business in Fairbanks this year. Nicholas Hedrick manages the Post Exchange at Fort Wainwright. The PX moved to a more modern location in May, and Hedrick says business has been up more than 50% this year. And Christmas shopping hasn't even moved into full swing.
Sales here have been real sluggish because most of the troops, not most, but a lot of the troops have been on maneuvers at Fort Greeley. And they will start returning this week with Thanksgiving. Friday, we expect the largest day of the year. I could see us doing approximately 120,000.
Generally, retailers expect the Christmas season should be good to them. Most believe the economy is on the upswing. This is the last year local shoppers will have a Nordstrom store in the area, but manager Marion Lundquist says she doesn't expect that to hurt business. She actually expects an influx of customers before the January closing.
Perhaps in some respects, some people may feel that they don't wish to shop here because of feeling disappointed that Nordstrom has chosen to leave. On the other hand, other people feel that this is their chance and they want to be prepared and get the items that they need before it's too late.
And if you're wondering just what is selling this year, just about anything. Appliances, clothes, toys, and traditional gift items are expected to be the main things on Christmas lists, and retailers hope they have to keep stocking those shelves. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornson. 3, 2, 1. It's been 4 years since the school district surveyed the community about local schools. In 1985, more than 60% of the borough residents surveyed gave Fairbanks Public Schools an A or a B. The school board wants to know how attitudes and opinions about the school district may have changed since then. About 400 randomly selected borough residents will be asked to take part in the survey. That should allow for about a 3% margin of error. Calls will be placed later this week to the people selected. Interviewers have nearly 60 questions they'll be asking during a personal visit with the respondents. Questions will deal mostly with programs in the schools. The district's Director of Program Planning and Evaluation, Nick Stayrook, says they'll be asking about a broad range of things.
What they think is particularly good or particularly bad about the schools. We ask them to look at the various elementary programs we have and determine how important they are. Similarly, we ask them questions about full-day kindergarten. Do they think that's something that we should be doing in our school district? Should we have after-school child care programs or before-school child care programs in our schools? How do the people feel about that? At the secondary level, we ask similar questions about the secondary curriculum. For example, should we be concentrating in reading, math, science, social studies, etc.? And how important are things like, having student activities in the schools, band and orchestra there, yearbook publications, foreign language instruction, those kinds of things. And we'd like to get people's opinions regarding that. There's questions about financing the schools. Would anybody in the community give us some suggestions as to how we're going to finance education in the future based on the fact that we may be getting less revenue from our traditional sources like oil revenue and things?
A few questions from the latest Gallup poll have been added to the survey. Two of them deal with parental choice, where parents could choose which public school their children would attend regardless of where they live. Stayrook says some questions will let the district see how it compares to other schools throughout the country. The first question on the survey asks for a grade of the school district, whether it should get an A, B, C, D, or F. But Stayrook says that the grade really won't be the most important thing that they hope to get from the survey.
As far as our planning purposes and things are concerned, that question on A, B, C, D, F for the school district is probably one of the least important questions for us. What's it going to tell us? How are we going to help to plan what we're doing in the district, knowing that we have a B or knowing that we have a C? It doesn't help us. But when you get down to very specific questions about certain elementary programs or full-day, half-day kindergarten programs, or should we have, reading programs at various levels of the school. I think there it gives us some very useful information regarding the direction the district should be taking. But I just know, given the Gallup poll and other things, is that that's the question that will probably come out in the media the most. is, you know, what was the grade that was given to the school district.
Results of the survey are expected to be compiled early next year. Stayrook hopes to have all the surveying done before the Christmas holiday break. Then he can start to tabulate all the numbers. Demographic information about respondents will be broken down, but individual information about the people answering the survey will be confidential. Just what the district will do with all the information gathered will be up to the school board. Stayrook says there are a number of things that could happen.
One, there are some specific questions that we can compare to previous years so that we can see whether or not we have changed over time. The opinion of the community is getting better or worse with respect to certain areas of the schools. It gives us one measure of how well the school district is doing in terms of providing education to the students. And basically, we would like to get information from the community, and some of the questions are set up in such a way that'll help provide us information when we start doing our long-range planning to improve our school district. In other words, questions in here on full-day kindergarten, for example. Well, if we find that 90% of the people responding to the survey, which would be an outstanding, you know, outstandingly large percentage, if that many people wanted a full-day kindergarten program, then we are going to have to do a number of things to try to plan to put such a program in place.
Stayrook says, on the other hand, if finances become a problem in the future, the survey can also show what things the community sees as less important. That could play a role in determining where any budget cuts might have to be made. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornson.
Hazelwood's attorneys are trying to make sure the skipper never goes on trial. Their main challenge is based on immunity. Federal law and state regulations saying someone who reports an oil spill can't be prosecuted for that spill. Hazelwood called the Coast Guard on March 24th, saying he was fetched up hard aground on Bly Reef and leaking, and his lawyers say that's enough to shield him from prosecution. Superior Court Judge Carl Johnstone says he's leaning against granting Hazelwood the broadest kind of immunity available under the law. That neutralizes the defense argument that the mere act of reporting the spill is enough to protect Hazelwood. Now the legal dance is centered on a more subtle distinction. The defense is arguing that Hazelwood's statement that the tanker is leaking can't be used against him, and neither can anything else that derives from that statement, including much of the investigation undertaken by the state. That leaves the state's attorney, Bob Linton, trying to prove it was inevitable that the grounding and the spill would have been found and investigated.
Our position is that at some point, the consequences of the spill become so great that persons would have become aware of it, even if there had been a report. In fact, even if the master of a vessel had exercised his Fifth Amendment rights, which he shouldn't really have, and simply remained silent, that is, if the vessel had gone aground and Captain Hazelwood, in this case, not made any report at all, would this spill have been found and when?
Within 4 days of the spill, state attorneys realized that any future legal case could be covered by the immunity issue, exactly the kind of immunity now claimed by Hazelwood's lawyers. In an effort to insulate themselves from information that could have been tainted by Hazelwood's statements, Linton set up two parallel sets of investigations. One group would use all of the information available, including Hazelwood's statements. The second group of prosecutors would operate without the benefit of Hazelwood's remarks and investigations by the Coast Guard and other agencies. The idea was to prove that the state could have gotten all the information it now has, even without Hazelwood. But defense attorney Richard Freeman says it doesn't work that way.
And the point is this, that the entire investigation was completed, or virtually the entire investigation was completed, before they took any actions to protect Captain Hazelwood under this immunity claim. What that means is that they really are trying to unring the bell. Oh, this was put together before they even addressed the immunity issue. When they finally address the issue, they are trying to cut this off, get the benefits of everything, all his statements, everything that they were led to from his statements, without paying the price that in Congress and in our case in the state, the state regulatory agencies expected.
Freeman won't be calling witnesses to back up his case. Instead, he'll try to knock holes in the testimony offered by state witnesses. Captain Hazelwood won't be taking the stand either. The proceeding is expected to last 2 weeks. If defense attorneys fail in their effort to block the state charges, Hazelwood's trial will start January 22nd. In Anchorage, I'm Bruce Melzer.
Three, two, one. Three public hearings about the proposed graduation requirement changes have been held over the past 2 months. After hearing the public's concerns, board members have finalized a proposal for consideration. The stricter requirements will come before the board next month. The school board will consider having students take one more credit before graduation, so they would have to take 22 credits instead of 21. The plan that's on the table also calls for students to take one more year of science and another year of math. The board will also consider making algebra a required high school course. And changing the physical education requirements has also been proposed by the board. Currently, 2 years of PE are needed to graduate. The board will consider changing that to 1 year of PE and 1 year of health education. Board President Jerry Macbeth, who has been a strong supporter of some change in the high school graduation requirements, says now that something has been finalized for review, the board expects to hear from the public again.
We wanted to identify some of the issues and further define them before we brought them to the board table for consideration. I think all members of the board are conscious that this is a change, even though it's a modest one, and we want there to be lots of opportunities for public input, so there would be two more opportunities. We have a meeting on December 19th. Where they would be introduced for the first reading, and then there would be a meeting in January for the second reading.
Another element that the board will explore is whether or not to require an entrance exam for incoming high school students. That would be used to see students' level of achievement and determine what areas they may need to devote more attention to during the high school years. School board members' discussion at a work session last night centered not just on the graduation requirements, but the overall quality of the education students are getting. Board members raised a number of points that have come up during the public hearings on the graduation requirements. They want to look at the need for better counseling at the high school level and the elective courses that are available to students. The board plans to review several of those concerns in the coming months. For KUAC Local News, I'm Ann Thornson.
The rate increase is the first in 6 years for Pioneer Home residents. They'll be paying from $100 to $275 a month more for a bed and meals. That's actually less than what had been talked about as an increase. It should raise more than $400,000 a year in extra rent. Still, the increase won't come close to paying all the system's bills. The state now spends roughly $27 million a year on operating the Pioneer Homes. Only $3 million of that is raised through fees charged to residents. And when the rate increases take effect in January, the Cooper administration will be asking the legislature for another $1 million or more to pay extra costs in operating the system. Deputy Commissioner of Administration Jim Fox says that financial fact of Pioneer Home life is generally understood by residents.
I do think that a majority feel that some adjustment in the rates was warranted, and most of the discussion I had with residents through the hearing process related to what was reasonable.
Besides the rate increase, a few changes in rules for Pioneer Home residents will also take effect in January. Included is one change aimed at freeing up more nursing care bed space in the homes. Nursing care is now required for one of every two Pioneer Home residents, and Fox says that has put extra pressure on the homes that nobody intended when they were first built.
And as medical care improves and they live longer, they just kind of filled up. And now we're trying to accommodate some of those in the residential wings who are already in the need of some services, who are no longer capable of independent functioning.
To do that, the system is formalizing a rule of thumb that 30 days is the limit for acute care in Pioneer Homes. After that, the state will try to find hospital or private nursing home care for residents needing it. And that's a far more expensive proposition. With the rate increase, it will cost just $800 a month for nursing care in the Pioneer Homes. Some private homes in the state charge 10 times that amount. In Juneau, I'm John Greeley.